Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be discussing something that is not often pleasant to listen to because of all the variables that can come in. So many of us are fond of programs, CSI, other programs on television, and Hollywood and movie productions can often create scenarios that are bigger than life. Well, maybe and maybe not. My next guest, Mr. Grant Langdon, is a gentleman whose book may well one day be made into a movie. It's called Scandal in the Courtroom, Found Guilty Without Trial. Mr. Langdon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you as a guest, and I was really fascinated with your material because this is your story. This is your true story, and it is something that when I finished reading it, I said to myself, this is tough. This is not easy, because not a lot of people are going to even want to really listen to what you have to say. This is an event that happened many years ago, but I want to give my audience a little bit of information about you before we get into it. You were born in 1938.
Yes.
You grew up in Copake, New York. And you grew up in a house that was built by your 10th great-grandfather. You graduated from Iowa State University, class of 62, in farm operation. You took over the family farm, and you got married, and you have a family, had a family. You also were the president of the Columbia County Farm Bureau and organized a Northeast Dairy Day in 1978 that attracted the governor of New York and the United States Secretary of Agriculture as principal speakers. But you had some experiences that no one would ever want to have. And it was all centered around arson. And I would like for you to go into a little bit of the reason why you felt you had to publish this book, because you have been slammed down in so many ways. You really had a tough road to hoe.
Yes, and it was very hard on my son, too. After the dairy day, the little town of Copake, which is kind of a real small town, that's typical of many small towns, farming communities around the country, started having a problem with a serial arsonist. And, of course, Copake was the type of place where when you went into the store, you knew everybody that was there and probably knew their parents and way back in the family. But anyhow, this little community was troubled by a serial arsonist that kept burning lots of buildings down, not just mine, but I did lose three barns to the arsonist.
Now, let's back up for a minute. This arson patterning started years before. This wasn't something that just went on for a couple of years. How many years have these arson fires been going on?
Well, it's hard to say definitely, but probably between 10 and 15 years. And within a mile and a half of my farm, at the time of my third fire, I figured that he burned down probably 45 buildings.
Now, in the process of this, when you start off in your book, and for those of you listening, this is titled Scandal in the Courtroom, Found Guilty Without Trial. This story has many different levels to it, as any story like this would have. And when these fires started. You know, here we watch programs on television and there are these people, these teams of people that go out and investigate and all kinds of things. But in this little town, when these fires started up, everybody was talking about the fact that it was arson. What happened? Why is it that none of these fires were really investigated? What did it take to get some investigators out?
Well, living in a small town, you know everybody. And, of course, the other thing was the sheriff was also from our small town. In fact, he was our former fire chief. And so he knew everybody in the community, too. And I don't think he wanted to arrest the person. And that caused a great deal of problems, of course. Everybody says, well, there's insurance. He'll collect the insurance and everything will be all right, and kind of went on. Well, it doesn't work out that way. Whenever there's a big fire like the ones I had, there's a lot of money that's lost, and lives are disrupted. And it's more of a crime against people, actually, I think, than it is a crime against the buildings. The people that were prominent in the community were the ones that seemed to be the target, and the arsonist could stalk them and decide who he's going to do what to. And then people started to notice a funny thing. Whenever the fire company had a big event like their Las Vegas night, which was their main fundraiser, there'd be a big fire and they couldn't hold the fundraiser. So there seemed to be a connection with the fire company. And, of course, as this went on, why the sheriff, I think he kind of painted himself in the corner, and I found out at one point that he'd given a fireman who'd been sent to arson school to learn how to detect arson a lie detector test for one of the fires, and he'd flunked it. And so after my third fire, I got a little upset, of course, and I went public with the idea that we did have an arson problem. Up to that point, the sheriff, whenever he had an opportunity, would say, well, it was caused by an electrical cause, and just let it go at that. Well, when I talked to the New York Times reporter, I told him about the fact that the sheriff had given a lie detector test to a fireman, and he'd flunked it. And so, of course, he went over and asked the sheriff if a fireman was indeed the prime suspect. Well, the sheriff wasn't too pleased with that, and so a week after the New York Times story came out, why, he arrested my 19-year-old son for burning our own barn down, which was ridiculous. But, of course, being the sheriff, he carried a lot of weight in the county, and, of course, at that point, I lost all my credibility, and my son was looked on as, well, actually something wrong with him mentally. And so it really affected him to a very great deal.
Let's talk a little bit about your community that was there, because Culpeper was quite successful for a number of years. There were all kinds of activities that went on, but you make a point in your book that there was a darker side of paradise in this small community in New York, because when trains stopped running by the community and the dairy industry was affected, there was just so many things that changed economically for your town. It became a community that the young people didn't want to stay with because there were not working opportunities there for them. And you said you were fortunate because when you were growing up, it was a very vibrant, alive community. There was prosperity in the community. But at the time this situation occurred, you said there were two Culpecs, one that was very open and friendly, like the good old days, and there was another side, which you call the darker side of paradise, that was closed and indifferent. And you said it was that second side, that dark side that spawned the arsonist, and it was the darker side that changed the future of the place. You made a statement, poverty has a social cost too.
That's very true. The things that really hurt the community prosperity-wise was when the road bypassed Copaic and the train stopped running. And then a little farther west, another major road was opened up that took a lot of the traffic out of the town. And then, of course, there was a paper mill in the neighboring town, which offered quite a bit of employment. And that had to close up for a time. And, of course, that put a lot of stress on a lot of people. About the only thing, there were some summer camps in the community, and a lot of these young people growing up, the only thing we could do really would be to clean up around the camps, and that was just a seasonal job anyhow. But anyhow, that's where the stress came from, and I think that's where the problem really started. And as far as the arsonist goes, I think it was more of he had a feeling of controlling the community. He decided when the fire was going to be, if the fire company could hold their Las Vegas night, if so-and-so, who had a job for him and then fired him or something, he could get even with him, and things like that. It was kind of a class-type thing.
Your arsonist, as you were depicting information in your book, Scandal in the Courtroom, you said the fire started with the camp and then ended up spreading into the farming community. And you remember the first fire when you were in the fourth grade. I mean, that is a long time that went on.
Well, actually, I have a theory on that it was actually more than one arsonist, of course, and I think it was a father-son team. The father did the early fires, I believe, and of course all this is unsubstantiated and just a theory on my part, but I think that very well could be the case. The Korean War came along, of course, and there were some people that left the community to go to war in Korea, and I think that's about the time that that series of fires stopped.
Now, it fascinates me that in this small town, I mean, you don't have all that many people in the community, and if the community knew who the arsonist was, figured out who it was, why was that the powers that be were not willing to take action against that individual? I remember when I was growing up, there was a kid. He was found, he was really what you'd call a pyromaniac. He just loved to watch things burn. And he had set fires in front of people's houses. He'd done all kinds of things. And he was caught in the act more than once. But people knew who it was in the neighborhood. We figured out who it was. And in a small community, why do you think that this has always been so hush-hush, that these people in the community just weren't willing to stand up and say, enough is enough, let's get with it?
Well, first of all, you had the sheriff, who was very much in charge of everything. And as a former fire chief, and of course he had political interest, and he probably had some family interest in there, too. And that was one part of it, and the other part was other people who discovered who it was were really afraid to say anything because they were scared their buildings would be set on fire. And I think that governed a lot of the hush-hush of it.
You make a statement in your book that 10 years of blazes encompass some 50 fires, 5-0 fires, that went from everything from the movie theater to people's homes, the barns, cars, pickups, and you were hit 3 times yourself.
We had 2 small lumber yards in town, and each of those suffered at least 4 fires each, too.
This is, you know, it's almost beyond me why, I mean, that many fires why there wasn't more attention called to it, an investigative situation that brought up. But let's get to your situation, because the last fire you had, the third fire, someone actually had a video that they took of it. Am I getting this correct?
There were some videos taken of the fire, yes. And of course, I hired an arson investigator. It was probably the best arson investigator in the state of New York, but he looked at pictures that were taken at the time of the fire and analyzed that and how it was started, and he concluded that it was started with a pilot fire in one part of the barn, and then gasoline or some similar material was spread on another part. And then, of course, he explained how a fire burns. If you look at a candle, you have the wick sticking up, and you have the flame above the wick. It isn't the wick that's burning. It's the fumes that are coming from the wax that evaporates. And so when the gas fumes and the fire get together, there's a violent explosion, of course, almost an explosion, and that's how he started the fire. And of course, we know from what we discovered later on that he got burned very badly when he started the fire, but it's just the investigation is an interesting study in itself.
Now, the investigation was, if anyone were to read your book, would call this investigation, other than the person that you hired, would basically say it was a farce, because there really wasn't an investigation done. In fact, one of the saddest sides of your story is the fact that your son, Frank, was arrested, wasn't read his Miranda rights, so much violation, the good cop, bad cop scenario, and he was forced into signing a confession that wasn't there. It wasn't even his own signature, if I remember correctly.
It wasn't even his own words. He was forced to sign a statement that they wrote. And, of course, the other thing about it that was illegal was a custodial situation, because they kept him there involuntarily, and they brought him 14 miles, put him in the sheriff's office, which they said they wouldn't do. And then they had an investigator come down from Albany, and they did a really rough investigation, interrogation, I should say. And they just browbeat him to the point where he finally signed the statement, which was absolutely ridiculous. The statement said that he flicked a cigarette into some hay to start the fire. Well, one thing that was wrong with that was my son didn't even smoke. So the sheriff held his news conference and announced it to the whole community, and they brought him in handcuffs, and the picture was in the paper and all that. And, it was just downhill all the way there. It was a very traumatic experience for me and, of course, for him.
No question about that. Throughout your book, you talk about the due process of law, which was not followed even remotely close to what it should have been.
That's correct. The district attorney, when they went into court and they started their hearing before Judge Lehman, there were so many things that were amiss that the judge was asking very serious questions, of course, which was obvious. And so the district attorney wanted to know what went on, and they went up to the third floor of the courthouse in the little office he had at the time up there. And they called an investigator, and they found out that an investigation that had been done shortly after the fire that established that somebody else did the fire. They were driving a blue Toyota long bed pickup truck. And they got burned so badly that when a fireman on the way to the fire passed him, going the other way, he could even smell the burned flesh. Well, when they found that out, the investigation really stopped as far as the sheriff's department went. But when the district attorney found that out, of course, it's exculpatory evidence, which meant it was a malicious prosecution. There was no basis for the arrest in the first place. And at that point, what he should have done was told the judge about it and probably gone to the state attorney general and have him prosecute the sheriff for breaking the law. New York State has a law that exculpatory evidence must be revealed to the grand jury. And, of course, you have the same sort of a situation in the Duke rape case where the district attorney just really sat on some evidence and went ahead with the prosecution anyhow.
So here you are with this scenario. Your son has been accused of a crime he did not commit. You're battling the system. Evidence has been found, and it's even on a videotape of this man who is running backwards because he was on fire after being thrown out of the building because of the gasoline explosion. You have all of this documentary. You also have in here a statement that somebody asked the sheriff if he ever arrested a person he knew was innocent. And he said, no, but it's done sometimes. You do it in the interest of public safety. You have to maintain control of the situation. If you lose control, bad things can happen. He was asked then, what happens when it comes up for trial? He said, that's not so easy. But if it comes up, you just screw it all up. That's how I remember it exactly. And also, the statement that damages are high because the case is never cleared up. The DA just drops it, so no conclusion is reached. The person arrested is never cleared of the crime. This is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Your son was innocent. He's never been declared cleared. If, with all of what goes on, and for those of you listening, this is a true story, scandal in the courtroom, found guilty without trial by Grant Langdon. Grant, with everything that you've gone through, you're almost 70 years old, you have been fighting to clear your son's name for a number of years. What would you advise someone in today's world with situations that can happen? I mean, life happens. What were the mistakes that you made, and if you were to have the opportunity to go through this again, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't have trusted my lawyer. I'd have watched him a whole lot more carefully. One of the big problems that really made the whole cover-up that the county did possible was they hired my attorney away as county attorney. That was before the thing came up for trial. And that, of course, was a conflict of interest, but I should have made my concerns known to this judge, not just go out and try to find another lawyer to handle the civil case. The lawyer claimed that as long as they didn't do the civil case and just did the criminal case, there was no conflict. Well, that was ridiculous, of course, but anyhow, a lot of evidence that my county, the county attorney slash my attorney, or my son's attorney, did, he didn't turn over all the evidence, so that was really a big handicap. But had it all been, a lot more should have been done in the hearing before trial on the that was done before Judge Lehman. That was the first thing, and of course, getting another lawyer to handle the case. I'd had three barn fires. I'd spent $30,000 with this one law firm that became county attorneys, and so I didn't have much money. I had to find a lawyer that would do it on contingency. Well, the lawyer I had hired, I through my accountant, turned out not to be as well financed as he should have been, and his lack of finances hampered the case a whole lot, too. Plus, what wasn't turned over and what was turned over by the attorney that took the county attorney's job, that was a big mess. And, of course, one of the things that I'm very upset with was when I went to the state about that, they found no fault with the attorney for taking the county attorney's job while he was supposed to be defending my son.
You have so much information in your book that I think is good for anyone to read, because it makes one aware of how important it is to make sure you never turn over originals to other people, that you make copies of everything, because evidence disappears, things just evaporate, seemingly. And today, and I know we're just about out of time, your son is living in another location because his life was destroyed in the community that you had at one time occupied. And there's so much that changed in your life and in his life. Did you write this book because you wanted to educate people?
That's part of it, yes. And, of course, I'm very hopeful to make a little money on it, of course, to make up for some of my losses. The farm that I had, they're building 130, I think it's 35 or 36 houses, housing units on just a part of it. So it was a very valuable piece of property. And yet, when I wound up here in Ohio, I had only $200 in my pocket and a car with 160,000 miles on it. And that was a little over 9 years ago. So getting the book published, of course, is a big big success in my life right there.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, it is going to give people a lot of insight into the reality. The justice isn't always served as we would think it would be, and due process may not necessarily be available, nor are you going to be assured that those persons that you work with are going to necessarily have your best interests at heart. And one of the biggest messages I got out of your book was you have to pay attention. You cannot assume that they're going to do what they're going to do. You have to pay attention. Grant, what is your website so people can go and can find out more about you, the information that you have to share on your website? Would you give that out, please?
Yes. It's www.grantlangdon, GRANTLANGDON.com.
His book is Scandal in the Courtroom, Found Guilty Without Trial. These things happen. We don't like to hear about them. We watch a lot of television thinking that that's the truth. It isn't. Real life many times holds stories that are greater than any fiction you could ever read. And this, I believe, is one of them. Grant Langdon, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in a moment. And Grant Langdon, if you wanted to go to his website, it's his name, GRANTLANGDON.com. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. Here in the U.S. of A, it's 877-876-5227. For you Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. For everyone else, it is 530-876-3222. And if you're wondering why the phone lines are open, well, I am a psychic, a mental practitioner. I'm delighted to share my intuitive insights with you. And remember, I'm an information resource, and I'm happy to assist in any way that I can. I don't know all, see all, or tell all. Ooh, you do expected. You're sort of surprised by that statement, unexpectedly given. Well, contrary to popular opinion, those people that are in the area of intuitive counseling, etc., they never see it all, know it all, and tell it all. It just doesn't happen that way. It's an amazing experience, and it's a wonderful tool to utilize, which, by the way, you have it too. No matter who you are, no matter what your life path is, you have that intuitive process too. But it does take work to develop it. And the reason it takes work is because it's like any other skill. You have to refine it. And that's the only way it can be utilized as a tool. I've had the good fortune to be able to talk with over the years and interview and interact with a number of people that have various skills of the mind, of the intuitive level, and they have been reproduced in scientific environments, and they themselves have developed these abilities. But it does take practice, 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 and everybody is different. You know, that's something that my students, when I was teaching classes, taught me, and I really enjoyed that interaction with the students because I found that the intuitive process operates so differently in everyone. We can have compatibility, but each and every person has their own particular way of receiving and also sending information. It is absolutely fascinating to me. And there is so much we don't know about the abilities of mind and the power of thought. It is just fascinating. And if anybody ever tells you that what they do is the absolute end-all of end-all, just realize they don't know what they're talking about. Right there, they are showing their own ignorance. Because the capacities and the abilities of human beings are just so expansive. We've just barely scratched the surface. And science is learning more and more about the brain, about the nervous system, and those. The nervous system is the highway. Sensory systems, protocol, if you will, for sending and receiving. And we're all senders and receivers. I can remember when I first started in the psychic work so many years ago, people's attitudes were, gee, you're either a sender or a receiver. Baloney. You do both. We have all of this stuff going on. Let me share a story with you that was told to me just yesterday. In fact, this was out at the Renaissance Fantasy Fair. I was setting up my booth. And it was quite interesting because one of the people out there was telling me how one gentleman that's been at this event every single year, he travels all over the country to various Renaissance fairs, and out here in Washington he had been at just about every one that ever had been put on. And he was a man who was in his 70s, and he passed away 2 months ago. And this lady that was sharing this story with me, she said, I've known this man for years. He's been a friend of the family for years. And what happened was on this particular date, and she gave the date, it was at 8:30 in the evening. And she said, we were at a function, and we were busy, and our cell phones were turned off. And her friend who was with her after they left the event said, we better turn them on. And she said, no, I do not want to turn my phone on. They said, what's the matter with you? She said, I don't know. I know as soon as I turn that phone on, I'm going to get bad news. Well, the phone stayed off until the next day, and they had some other business that they were conducting, and so they were out doing business. Phones were still off because they couldn't allow them to ring while they were at this particular function. And when they came out of the function, the statement was made, got to turn the phones on. She said, I don't want to turn the phones on. Person asked her why. She said, I know I'm going to hear bad news. Sure enough, her friend turned on their telephone. Within a minute after that phone was turned on, it started ringing and ringing and ringing. He answers the phone, and he turns to her and said, this gentleman that she had known for so many years had died. And she said what really put chills up and down her spine is that he had died at 8:30 the previous evening, which was when she had gotten this awareness that something was very wrong. And, of course, she has lived with these experiences all of her life. And she said, I just knew something was happening. I just knew it, and I didn't want to hear it. And lo and behold, as soon as those cell phones went on, bingo, my associate got the message, and we were made aware of it. These things happen. And when you pay attention to this part of the sensory self, it can be feeling, it can be hearing, it can be something you can taste. It's just this awareness. It is there. And when it is there, you need to recognize that that's part of your survival kit. This is something you're supposed to have. Doesn't belong, the intuitive gift doesn't belong to just a few people. It belongs to everyone, everybody. But you must be willing to work with yourself to utilize it. So if you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do it. Again, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also, a direct line of 530-876-3222. And some of you may have wondered what happened to our website yesterday. Well, apparently a hacker got in and did a number on bbsradio.com, but everything is up and working from what I understand quite beautifully today. Now, I mentioned the Renaissance Fantasy Fair just a moment ago. I am excited. Our booth is all set up, and boy, tomorrow is the big day, the first day of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and it is exciting. We're going to have the pirates shooting the cannon, announcing the opening of the event. And it starts at 10 a.m. and goes until 6 in the evening. Now, this is for the first 3 weekends in August. Again, tomorrow is going to be the very first day. This is being held at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. And you can go to their website, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair.com. And you will find all kinds of information about the passes, etc. And wow, what entertainment are we going to have? It's incredible. Not only is there going to be jousting and equestrian events, but there's going to be gypsies dancing, Celtic dancing, there's wandering minstrels, storytelling, all kinds of games for children, because this is a family event. So if you can put it on your calendar, if you're in the state of Washington, and I know some of you around the country love these Renaissance activities. We have people fly in from all around the country to attend this wonderful event. It's gotten such a wonderful reputation. And I'm going to be there right on Main Street and look for the booth that has the gigantic yellow-gold banners with the red lions, bright red lions on it. And that's where I'm going to be. And I will be in costume. Oh, it's so much fun. And if you don't have a costume, if you want to get in costume for the Renaissance feel, well, we've got people that will be happy to give you whatever garb you desire. Don't forget the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, August 4th, 5th, 11th, 12th, 18th, and 19th. Tomorrow is the big day, and the Pirates will be there. Aye, yes, the Pirates. They'll be there to open up the event with a shooting of a cannon. You have to plug your ears. Believe me, it's loud. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. For all others, 530-876-3222. Customer disservice. Well, there was an email sent to a B&Q, it's a British do-it-yourself store, after a yacht it sponsored set a record for circumnavigating the globe. This is what the email said. Dear sir, madam, my congratulations to you on getting a yacht to leave the UK, sail 27,348 miles around the world, and arrive back 71 days later. Could you please let me know when the kitchen I ordered 96 days ago will be arriving from your warehouse 13 miles away? Oh, boy. I wonder how they answered that question. That's a doozy. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or Canadians, 888-815-9756. People have stories to share. People have stories to tell, and I get a number of them. And there's this wonderful, wonderful story about a woman by the name of Kathleen who was just so frustrated because she was looking at her backyard, and it was a pit. There was nothing really exciting to look at, and she just got frustrated every time she opened up her windows at the back of the house and looked at this blah environment. Well, she had a neighbor, Mr. Perkins, and he saw her out surveying her garden and wanted to know how everything was. He said, "What are you up to?" Well, Kathleen said to Mr. Perkins, "I was just wishing my yard looked like yours. It seems as if there's always something in bloom on your side of the fence." Well, Mr. Perkins just laughed. He said, "I'll tell you what, I wish I could take credit for my wonderful garden, but I can't. I have to confess that my grandchildren were the force behind what you are perceiving as a masterpiece of a garden." Well, that surprised Kathleen. She wondered how in the world grandkids would have had anything to do with this beautiful, beautiful yard. He said, "I'll tell you the story about it. Lily was 7 at the time and Chad was 9. They thought my yard was terribly boring because it was nothing but grass. So what happened is the three of us sat down with a bunch of books, magazines, and what we did, we cut out of the magazines pictures of plants we thought that would look nice, and then we went to the library and did some research on gardens. Well, we started, all three of us, to get really excited about what we could do with my yard instead of just having grass. And we started visiting nurseries and various farms. He said, we even went door-to-door in the neighborhood asking for cuttings off of people's plants. He said, with my grandchildren, the three of us wanted to know about all kinds of plants. Well, Kathleen was enthralled with the story. She said, wow, you guys really did your homework. He said, we had to, because none of us knew anything about gardening. He said, now take a look, Kathleen. You see the tulips that I have over there? Let me tell you the story about those tulips. My granddaughter Lily read about the miles of tulip fields in Holland, and we started talking about my wife's relatives that she has in Holland. And one thing led to another, and we ended up traveling to Holland on a tulip mission. We brought back hundreds of bulbs, and that bed of color, there is the result. The foliage covering the trellis near the fountain was inspired by our trip to Kew Gardens outside of London. And these lilies, of course, are in honor of my granddaughter, Lily. Kathleen was astonished. She said, I had no idea every plant had a story behind it or how many people and places contributed to it. And Mr. Perkins, he said, when you think about it, the best gardens require collaboration. You're always working with somebody or something. Nature, time, and other things as well. He said, so I think of my garden as a shared passion. Kathleen said, well, I hope I can capture a little of that once I start working on my backyard disaster. He said, you know, there's something about doing a garden. Once you get your fingers into the dirt, you'll find that the passion will grab a hold of you all by itself. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I want to give you the phone numbers, and also I'm going to tell you the guests we've got coming up next week. Phone numbers to call in if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Toll free, U.S. of A, 877-867-6527. Canadians, 888-815-9756, and all others, 530-876-3222. By the way, if you have a story, if you have something special you'd like to share with me, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's D-E-L-P-H-I and the whole word international.com. And I've gotten half of my subscriber list out for my newsletter, and then the rest will be going out today, so you'll have information about when I'm going to be in San Francisco, and I've got a program coming up in Alaska, and so all kinds of things are going to be in the newsletter that'll be coming out. The last batch will be going out today. Next week, here's the lineup I have of guests. And by the way, you can always find out who's coming up as a guest on vbsradio.com. There is that information listing that's put out every month, so you can always go in and check who is coming up. And this coming Monday, we're going to be talking with Scott Fox. If you're interested in using the Internet in a whole new way, well, Internet riches are going to be the topic. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be dealing with those relationships where you have a broken heart. And if any of you have been going through some ups and downs or something like that, well, Paul Davis will be able to help us out. Messages, evidence for life after death, George Danzel. This is a marvelous book. I really enjoyed it. Also, Dr. Graveline, we're going to be talking about statin drugs and their side effects. Science is coming forward big time with so many people that are asking questions that were never been asked before, and we are getting answers, and a lot of them we don't like because it is showing how we must be more aware of what we are taking. And then Topher Morrison is going to be my guest. Settle for excellence is what we're going to be talking about, not mediocrity. Excellent. So that's what we've got up for the lineup for next week, and I invite you to tell your friends. And also, don't forget, the shows are now archived daily, so you don't have to miss any of them. We all have wild and woolly schedules, and so you can always go in. If you have stuff to do on the computer, turn on bbsradio.com, pop in an archive, and there you got it. You're going to be able to hear the show. And the only thing you won't be able to do is call in live. That's the only thing. But if you wanted to do it now, you could. 877-876-5227 and 888-815-9756 for Canadians. Have you ever wondered how they do miniaturization and make it look as if it is full size and real life? Well, this is something I've always been fascinated with, and I know the art of the camera is absolutely imperative. You need to know exactly how to position things and what to do. So if you want to make anything look like a toy, and I've got in front of me some photographs by Olivo Barberi, which one of them is a six-acre Roman Colosseum, and it resembles an upside-down soda cap. And then I've got an image of Las Vegas and also Rome, the city of Rome, and then an 80,000-ton boat that is being photographed. And they're all so tiny, and they're built to scale. But this is something, I mean, obviously, if you had, you know, one of these explosive movies and you had to blow up the Colosseum or whatever, you're not going to actually blow up the Colosseum, so that's where miniaturization comes in. But optical illusion is what they are producing, and Barberi uses a tilt-frame camera to shift the plane of focus so that it's out of alignment with the film that's being used. And it allows a wide-angle aerial view to be captured in proper perspective. Now, huge structures, we can perceive them as miniature because of the blurring that he creates with an overly shallow focus. Now, there's a visual neuroscientist, Ray Finney, of Wheaton College in Illinois. He said, if you were actually looking at a model, your eye would be focusing at a short distance, so things closer and farther away would be blurred in a similar manner. And he said the naturally bright, washed-out look of images cinches the trick. The loss of detail makes objects seem even more model-like. So it's the magic and the illusion with the camera, with lights, with size. All of this is really an art. It's absolutely amazing. And that's why so many times we can easily be fooled. Did you know that ginger can kill ovarian cancer cells? That's right. They found this in test tubes, and they said the spice strikes in two ways, which might make it work against tumors resistant to chemotherapy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get rid of chemotherapy and radiation? Wouldn't that just be awesome? The side effects from those treatments are just incredible. And if we could replace it with something that would leave healthy tissue healthy and get rid of the bad cells that just shouldn't be there, by golly, that would be great. Just think of what ginger might be able to do. Also, optical clocks are now the most accurate timepieces today. Lasers hold a strontium 90 ion in place near absolute zero, and it regularly emits photons, and it is displacing the atomic clock. Who would have thought that that would be a possibility? And this information about Navy SEALs, and this doesn't surprise me at all because of all the brains that are working together to develop things. Florida researchers hope to give Navy SEALs sonar perception by connecting their tongues to brain ports through 144 electrodes. A similar system has given blind people vision. Incredible steps forward. The more we can learn about the human body, the more we're going to be able to assisted in maintaining its strengths, its capacities, and its wellness. It's amazing. Just think, 50 years ago, there was so much we didn't know. We just assumed things. Realizing now, can't assume, because there is a lot going on in this world, and it is a delight to be able to bring people to this radio show that share with us what their discoveries are. Speaking of sharing, tomorrow's the big day, the first day of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and I'm going to be there. I want to encourage you, if you're in the state of Washington, take time. These next 3 weekends, it's going to be dynamic. The weather is going to be perfect, and we are going to have a blast. So bring out your family, your friends, your neighbors. Just know that it's a wonderful family event at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. Hours are from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and wow, I'm going to be able to tell you about all kinds of things that are going to be going on. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. You got a good life. Enjoy it. And don't forget to tell somebody that you love them. It makes a difference. Donna Sebo, talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Doctor, doctor, can you help me? I'm feeling stressed. I cut back medication, the Prozac and the cigarettes. I've seriously considered crawling in your arms tonight. I've seen the shadows that move, all dressed in blue, so I keep turning on the light.
Words soon spoil the fun. I felt that I was good. If you love me, take me as I am. If